There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
And now it's time for Castaway, where we strand a different lucky guest each week on a desert island with only three books to read. This week on the island, we have Emirates Airline Festival of Literature author Robert McCram.
Castaway, what's your literary sustenance on a desert island?
We stranded him like Robinson Crusoe, except we've left him with three books to keep him company instead of cannibals. So we're not that bad, really, are we, Isabel?
Not at all. Not at all.
To give you an idea of just how brilliant he is, here's a bit of background on Robert McCram.
Robert McCrum is a writer and editor. From 1980 to 1996, he was editor-in-chief of Faber & Faber, where he published internationally acclaimed authors. At the same time, he wrote seven novels and co-authored the Emmy Award-winning The Story of English. In July 1995, McCrum suffered a serious stroke, a personal crisis he described in My Year Off, a book now regarded as an essential study in the understanding of the condition. He's penned an award-winning biography, P.G. Wodehouse, A Life. His other work, Globish, was an international bestseller. McCrum is associate editor of The Observer and lives in London. He has just completed Every Third Thought, which will be published this year.
So there you go, a little bit of information about Robert there. And we're now going to just transport both him and you to the island, where I've just asked him what the first book he's brought with him is.
Well, the first one I brought with me is a book which I've known since I was about 10 years old. It's a book which always makes me laugh. And I thought, because one of the things I think about on this island is I want to be, I'm probably slightly prone to depression. I think I might be rather depressed and also fearful. I want to be cheered up. So the book that I've chosen for my first book is a book which is a kind of classic of English comedy. It's a book called Three Men in a Boat by a writer called Jerome K. Jerome. And it's a book which always makes me laugh every time I read it, and is a delightful example of English prose. So I think it would be both nostalgic and entertaining.
Well, the title would certainly fill you with hope if you're stuck on a desert island.
Well, that's right, yes. I mean, it's about three men who actually take a rowing boat up the River Thames.
About the content, though, what is it about this book that makes you want to turn to it again and again? Because I imagine being on a desert island, you'd want cheering up, but you'd also need something that you could read again and always see something new in?
Well, I suppose the thing about Three Men in a Boat is it's full of humanity, and it's full of sort of sly English humour about, you know, human foibles. It also paints a picture of English life. So it would remind me of home, and it would remind me of the peculiar people who live in England, and how much entertainment value one can get from them, and it would also bring back memories of my childhood when I first read it. So it's a book which, although it's very much a book for grown-ups, I think it's a book which appeals for all ages. Actually,
you included Three Men in a Boat on your list of the 100 best novels, and mentioned how you can see its influence in the work of P.G. Wodehouse, among others. So as someone who's looked particularly closely at Wodehouse's work, because you wrote a biography about him, what about this book made you choose it instead of something like Wodehouse?
Well, that's a good question, because, I mean, Wodehouse is somebody who I sort of revere as a great English stylist, but, you know, it's hard to know which one of his books to choose, because there are so many. And the thing about Jerome K. Jerome is that he's the same era as Wodehouse, but he dies in the 1920s, when Wodehouse is coming to his prime, and he writes a number of books, but only one book really succeeds, this one, Three Men in a Boat, and I think that it's a kind of standalone classic, in a way that Wodehouse's work, I can't take all Wodehouse's books with me, but this one book is a very nice substitute.
How did you first come across Three Men in a Boat?
Well, I came across it when I was stranded, so to speak, on a desert island, when I was sent away to school when I was 10, and I was quite homesick and lonely, and I found this book in the library, and I just started to read it, and from the first page, I was completely hooked, and it just cheered me up. It is a book which does, you know, it's not for everybody, and some people don't find it funny, but I find it very, very funny, and it's very cheering. In a dark moment. So as I say, I do slightly imagine being rather oppressed by being on this desert island you're sending me to. So I think it would be a good one for that, in that respect.
For listeners who aren't familiar with the book, one thing that I've read about it is that it's a book in which everything happens and nothing happens. Could you elaborate a bit more on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of, in some ways, it's what we might call a Shaggy Dog story. You know, it goes nowhere. They go up, these three men, they're three young men, by the way, they're in their 20s, and they're working in the city, and one of them works at a bank, and they really wanted to get out of town and, you know, go off and have a break out of town. And they really want to go up river, but they don't get as far as they intend to go. The weather turns bad. You know, this is England, the weather turns bad, it rains a lot, and they come home. And so it sort of goes nowhere, and it is like, I think, like, you know, many of the greatest comedies, I mean, one thinks of Seinfeld, which is always said to be a show about nothing. The greatest English comedies are about nothing and everything. And that's really the point. You know, there are inconsequential conversations about pineapple tins and the quality of cheese and the nature of canvas on a, you know, it's really minute sort of futile things, but it's written in a very charming way, which is hard to explain, not, you know, without actually reading it aloud. It has great charm, great humanity, wit, and a very good ear for the English language.
So there you go, that was Robert McCrum with his first Castaway book, and we've not finished stranding him just yet. But I wanted to briefly talk about what Robert's doing at the Literature Festival, because obviously we're stranding authors who are coming to the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. It's happening from the 1st to the 10th of March. At any point during the show, if you're listening to us talk about these authors and you want to know how you can find out more information and where you can get information about tickets, you can go to emiratelitfest.com for all of that. All the tickets are on sale at the moment. So Robert's book that's just out is called Every Third Thought. Does the line sound familiar, Isabel?
Yes.
Where's it from? Quick quiz.
Shakespeare.
It's from Shakespeare.
William
Which play?
Shakespeare. The Tempest. Prospero.
Excellent.
Isabel.
Smarty pants.
Yeah, absolute smarty pants. Can I just say that unless Annabella briefed her beforehand, that was completely
off the cuff.
Off the cuff.
Yeah. No, yeah. She hadn't.
In awe.
But
yeah.
I mean, I'm an absolute. I love William Shakespeare, and if you look at how much of what Shakespeare wrote comes into in usage, you know, even today, every third thought. Have you got the whole quotation?
I do have the whole quotation, I think. Yes. It begins, "And thence retire me to my Milan, where every third thought shall be my grave."
Mm.
So there you go.
And I mean, this book, I'm halfway through Every Third Thought by Robert McCrum. It is an incredible book. So he was struck. He had a stroke in his late 40s. You know, a very fit, slim, you know, a supposedly healthy individual, and he just had this huge cerebral, what do they call them anyway, it was a stroke, and he writes about it. He's written two books. One is about when he actually had the stroke, but then he's in his 60s, this was 20 years ago, he's thinking about mortality and about how we, in today's world, where we're living longer, how do we actually approach it? You know, are we in a world where we are completely denying that the end is going to come, and what do we do about it? And it is it's an absolutely fascinating book. And what I love about it, in the bits that I've read so far, is how much literary he brings in other writers, whether fiction, non-fiction, and about their thoughts about death. So I think this is an absolutely brilliant title.
He writes very well about a difficult subject matter,
yeah,
taking his experience from, you know, being editor of Faber and Faber and his experience with literature over the years. That's happening on Friday the 9th of March at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. Again, emiratelitfest.com for more information about that. Now, you mentioned a chance to win a couple of tickets earlier, Isabel.
I did, to the Wonder Woman session. Well, I think all of us in the studio actually are Wonder Women, so we can come along to that. But the question is about one of the panellists, Nnedi Okorafor, who has got a new comic graphic novel series featuring, again, a new hero. His name is Anta, and he's based on an Arab world famous poet warrior, part history and part legend. What was his second name? He's Anta bin ? Just send in his second name to 4001 and you will win yourself two tickets to the Wonder Woman session that has Nnedi, has James Dashner and Rihanna Pratchett.
Remember to include your name on all text messages as well, otherwise we'll just call you random names that we come up with and they might be insulting, you never know.
Yeah, exactly.
So the session that you're entering to win tickets for on the text line is Wonder Women featuring Nnedi Okorafor, Rihanna Pratchett and James Dashner. And basically it reads thus, whether relegated to love interest or stuck in the archetype of strong female character, women in science fiction and fantasy stories haven't always benefited from the fantastic worlds they inhabit. This panel discusses the women they write and where fantasy and real world prejudices meet. That's one that is going to be absolutely brilliant. So do text in to 4001. Now, there's another thing that we've got all the prizes today. Very quickly, I just want to mention The Maze Runner, because there's a copy of The Death Cure available for anybody who wants to win it, because the movie has just been out and something rather interesting happened at Festival City to promote it.
It did indeed. I know. I do love
it. Ties in with the title.
Absolutely. Do love a good Guinness World Record.
So basically, Dubai's new record is the largest human maze. Hundreds of people showed up to create another record for the world's largest human maze. Apparently, the minimum they needed was 175, which seems quite a low number.
But they got over 300.
But they got
so
over 300.
They almost, you know, they had no issues in smashing that world record. And I thought, what an interesting creative way of launching the Maze Runner film.
And of course, we might have a Guinness connection at the festival.
We do indeed
have the editor of the Guinness Book of World Records.
Yeah,
which is quite exciting.
Castaway, what's your literary sustenance on a desert island?
So 2018 Emirates Airline Festival of Literature author Robert McCrum is the former editor-in-chief of Faber and Faber, author of fiction and non-fiction, including award-winning biography P.G. Woodhouse, A Life, Globish, My Year Off, and most recently, Every Third Thought, a set of reflections on life, death, and the endgame, which we were just talking about in the studio. He is also co-author of the Emmy Award-winning television series, The Story of English. But all these credentials will not save him from our clutches on Castaway. We will continue to strand Robert on a desert island until he spilled all his book secrets. So he's told us about his first book, Three Men on a Boat by Jerome K. Jerome. And the next book that he's going to tell us about is one of Isabel's favourites.
My next book is more nostalgic. It also has a kind of wry humour, but it's a children's book. And it's a book which one of the things I'm thinking about on this island, you know, I'll be cut off from my family, and I should be thinking about my two daughters, Alice and Isabel, who are now, one of them is 20 and the other one is 18. But when they were born in the late 1990s, a book came out which I used to read aloud to them every single night when they were small, and it's a book which brings back all my memories of their childhood, my memories of that time, and it's a book by a woman called Julia Donaldson, a book called The Gruffalo.
I've heard of it.
You've heard of it.
It's
kind of a contemporary classic.
Yeah.
And it's a poem, and you may even have read it. It's a charming tale about a mouse who goes for a walk in a deep dark wood.
Julia Donaldson actually came to the festival a couple of years ago.
Oh, really? Well, I met her once. She's a delightful woman. And she wrote this book, I think, for her family. It came out in 1999, I think, when my kids were 3 and 4, or 3 and 5, respectively. And I used to read to them every night. And it's a charming, it's got a lovely rhythm to it. The Gruffalo is an imaginary character. It's based on a Chinese folk tale about a creature who goes into a forest and meets a tiger.
I didn't know that.
No, it's based on the Chinese folk. And so the creature goes into the Chinese forest and meets a tiger who threatens to eat him. And the way in which he fools the tiger is by saying that he's got the support of some strong allies. And he turns the tiger around and they walk back through the forest, and The creature has a tiger behind him. So everyone who sees the creature thinks he sees him as a fierce creature. So in the Gruffalo story, the mouse meets a fox, a snake, and another character who's temporarily forgotten. But he meets a fox who threatens to eat him and a snake who wants to eat him. And he says, "I can't stop it. I can't stay longer because I have to go and see a Gruffalo." And they say, "What's a Gruffalo?" And he says, and he invents this character to baffle his would-be eaters, the snake and the fox and so forth. And he invents this character called the Gruffalo, which is an imaginary character who has terrible claws and terrible expressions. And then finally, he meets his invention. He meets his own his imaginary invention, the Gruffalo, and who is indeed as terrible as he said he was. And he thinks quickly, and he says, "You can't eat me because I've got a figure who's going to come and eat you up." That's to say, a fox or a snake. And it's a charming tale, and it's cleverly, very cleverly constructed. It's only 700 words long. It's very short, and but brilliantly told by Julia Donaldson. And I think it's really a contemporary English classic.
You're the second person on the island to have taken a picture book with you on Castaway, but the first with this particular one. And so would there always be a picture book with you, or is it just specifically the Gruffalo that you have a soft spot for?
I think the pictures in this particular are by a cartoonist called Alex Scheffler, and they're very charming. And his picture of the Gruffalo is sort of appropriately scary, but not really scary. It's just charming, and it's, as I say, for me on the island, it would bring back, you know, very happy memories of my children's childhood.
You mentioned in the 10 years or so that you were the literary editor of The Observer, there was just one book published that you knew would be 100% admired and read by people of all ages for years to come, and that in 1999, when it came out, that book was The Gruffalo. How did you know then?
I just had a very strong instinct. I've got, you know, I've spent my life making judgments about books, and so, you know, a lot of the time I think one you can get it wrong, but I think on this one I was absolutely right, and I think it's become more and more famous as time has gone on. It has a kind of narrative purity which is very special and very, very rare, I think, and it feels, although it's based on this Chinese tale, as I've said, it feels completely original. And indeed, the character of the Gruffalo is an original creation. And I think Julia Donaldson, she may have mentioned this to you when she came out, you know, it began with a grr, so she thought of the grr. And then she had to have the thing about tiger is it doesn't rhyme with much. Gruffalo, O is a great rhyming word, so she ended up with, she created this wonderful name, the Gruffalo, and it's a very good rhyming word in the poem. Everything can rhyme with it.
So there you go, that was Robert McCrum talking about his second and surprising book for his Castaway choice there.
But I think I can totally, totally empathise with him that those books that you read hundreds and hundreds of times to your children, they become part of your history, don't they, Vet?
They do, and I think, I mean, certainly Charlotte's 31 this year, Matthew's 29, and the picture books that they loved when they were children, we still, as a family, quote lines from them, and obviously visitors look at us slightly askance, but yeah, I do think that should be part of childhood that's remembered,
yes, and loved,
and loved, it,
you know, if you go down the generations and the same books are loved, you know, two or three, I've got now the generation after my children, the grandchildren, and it's lovely that they are now reading, and they all absolutely adore the Gruffalo. Mm. I think the Gruffalo and Going on a Bear Hunt have to be two classic
yeah.
books.
Bear Hunt, I've never loved that book, I have to say,
because swishy.
It was just a rhyme that existed anyway. So that one I'm conflicted about, but I think where you know the Gruffalo, where the wild things are, and so on. One of the best sessions I ever went to at the festival was possibly in the first year or second year when they had the translators of the Gruffalo into Arabic.
Oh
my goodness! And that
because it must have been so difficult.
Yeah, and they talked about how on earth do you translate it? At Jess once, I did a story time with the Arabic teacher. She read the Arabic, I read the English, and the Arabic just goes beautifully. You don't have to understand it because it just follows the same rhythms.
Because it's got
that
a wonderful
has to be
rhythm.
One of the best translations ever, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Castaway, what's your literary sustenance on a desert island?
So this week on the island we have a festival author, we've got Robert McCrum. If you missed it earlier, here's some background on our desert island victim.
Robert McCrum is a writer and editor. From 1980 to 1996, he was editor-in-chief of Faber & Faber, where he published internationally acclaimed authors. At the same time, he wrote seven novels and co-authored the Emmy Award-winning The Story of English. In July 1995, McCrum suffered a serious stroke, a personal crisis he described in My Year Off, a book now regarded as an essential study in the understanding of the condition. He's penned an award-winning biography, P.G. Wodehouse, A Life. His other work, Globish, was an international bestseller. McCrum is associate editor of The Observer and lives in London. He has just completed Every Third Thought, which will be published this year.
So there you go, a little bit about Robert McCrum there, who's our author on the desert island. He's given us Three Men in a Boat by Jerome K. Jerome, a comedy classic where both nothing happens and everything happens. The Gruffalo by Julia Donaldson, illustrated by Axel Scheffler. And his third choice, well, I'm just surprised that no one else has brought it to the island yet.
OK, well, the third one is really sort of very, very obvious. It's also very big. So it will last me for years and years and years. A book I can read and reread again and again without ever getting tired of it. And it is, of course, the collected works of William Shakespeare. It's a very obvious choice, but he's the greatest writer that ever was. And he just is the greatest. And his poetry and his plays, his characters, his language, his imagination, it all goes to make up an extraordinary experience in book form. And so to have that on my island will make me very happy. I'd be happy to be cast away with him, his works. And I think they would last for, as I say, a long time.
The title of your latest book, Every Third Thought, is taken from a line in The Tempest, which seems fitting considering we're on a desert island. What specific comfort does Shakespeare give you?
Well, I think about Shakespeare is he's like a mirror. And whatever your mood is, you can reflect that mood in Shakespeare and find an answer. If you're feeling very bleak, you can turn to the bleakness of a play like Winter's Tale or Hamlet. His poetry is very consoling. Or if you're feeling murderous, you can just turn to Macbeth, and there you have the figure of a murderous king. Or if you want comedy, you can turn to Much Ado About Nothing or All's Well That Ends Well or Midsummer Night's Dream. And there's tremendous comedy there. There are also characters who are very, very brilliantly drawn, and great characters who are kind of archetypal. You know, we all know, Lear and Bottom and Prospero and Portia and Charlotte. You can the list goes on and on. Romeo and Juliet, Hamlet, Othello, and so forth. These are characters who are more real to us in some ways than our own friends and relations.
Unfortunately, because you've told me that on Desert Island Books, on Desert Island Discs, they wouldn't let you take Shakespeare because that's one of the rules, I feel like I'm being a little bit too nice on Castaway now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say you've taken the collected works with you, but if you had to only take three specific plays, which would you bring with you?
I think first of all, you've mentioned this already, I think I would take The Tempest because it's very appropriate. It's set on an island and it's got some lovely poetry and great characters, Caliban, Prospero, Miranda, and so forth. I take The Tempest, which is a very late play. I take an earlier play, Midsummer Night's Dream, which I was in at school, and I've always loved to play.
Who did
marvelous
you?
Comedy.
Who did you play?
I played a fairy. I played the first fairy.
First fairy.
A very, very small part, but it was great fun to be in, and it is a marvellous play. It's a great comedy, and it's also a brilliant fantasy as well. I'd choose The Tempest, I'd choose Midsummer Night's Dream, and then I would have to choose one of the tragedies. I'd probably choose Hamlet, because it's a dark and it's got so much depth to it, and there's so much in Hamlet. Also, it's a long play, so there'd be plenty to chew on the island.
Most people are introduced to Shakespeare at school. Was that your experience?
At school, I remember I did for what was then called O-Level, I think we did Macbeth from memory. And I didn't really... I remember being in Shakespeare plays at school. I don't remember being taught them much in the way that they can be taught now, but I think that's one of the ways in which one comes first to read Shakespeare. But I think for me, he's somebody who I've got more interested in as I've got older.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Like, did you fall in love with it slowly or all at once?
I think slowly. And it's one of those things which, as I said before, it's a mirror in which you can reflect endlessly. You always find there's always some new angle which comes to you from it, from the work.
So there you go, that was Robert McCrum with his third Castaway book, The Complete Works of William Shakespeare. Yvette seems to think that's cheating a little bit.
Well, you've got quite a lot of books in one. As you said, it's quite large.
Yeah, I did make him choose three plays in the end to narrow it down a little
yes,
bit.
Yes, I thought that was much better. If you've got Shakespeare with you, if you've got the whole lot, then you're never going to be bored, are you? Let's face it.
Absolutely not. And I didn't realise that of there's 36 plays, aren't there, in the first folio?
I do not know.
Yeah. 17 were printed in Shakespeare's lifetime in various good and bad smaller quarto editions. One was printed after his death, and 18 had not yet been printed at all at that time. So we would not have had, if they hadn't have put this folio together, we would not have had, can you imagine, Twelfth Night, Measure for Measure, Macbeth, Julius Caesar, The Tempest, would all have never been there. And it was two people who were actors as well, called John Hemming and Henry Condell, who edited and supervised the printing. They also sorted it into comedies, tragedies, and what's the other one?
Histories.
But it wasn't, that wasn't, none of that happened in Shakespeare's time. So
I find the whole Shakespeare plays quite hard to get my head around, because they did these plays for like a week or whatever. So he wrote them. They're quite good. He's quite a good writer.
Yeah, they're all right. The lines.
How much would you have had to learn and retain, and then just very quickly change, because basically they were just performing them as and when. You didn't get your 6 month run at the Globe.
I think what they would have done. They would have travelled from place to place, and you would have learnt two or three parts, and you'd have, and I mean, no one would have worried.
That's a good question though, because it also brings us to the topic of something else that came up the other day: the fact that now we retain less because we don't need
Absolutely.
To. Absolutely. Yeah, and maybe it's just a matter of our brains have got used to not having to retain.
I think they have, and that's why I think it. You know, going back to old school poetry recitals and learning things by heart is actually a really good training for children. Which brings me nicely, and I have to mention it, Annabelle, now it's just come out of my mouth, I'm sorry, Poetry for All. So I've spent yesterday going through all the poems for the English side that have been submitted for our performance poetry competition, and the rounds that we run. So schools run a round first, we're doing what we call the second round, which is starting next week.
Goodness.
Yeah, well, sort of week after, week tomorrow.
What's been popular choices for
Maya Angelou,
That's always popular.
Yeah. Phenomenal Woman, those are probably popular. Some Robert Frost in there, a bit of Roald Dahl, but quite some interesting choices, actually. Bit of Wordsworth. And then also some, as I say, you know, from Wordsworth to Maya Angelou. It's quite a variety.
Are they chosen from an anthology, or do they get to choose their
own? We used to do an anthology, but that was quite limiting, I think. And then when we introduced the younger age group as well, so basically it runs from age 8 up to 13 and then 14 to 18, we actually gave them a free choice, which I think works quite nicely. And certainly for those of us judging it, you're not necessarily comparing the same poems together. Otherwise, if you've got six children doing the same poem, that's quite hard.
And also when you're a student and you're there and you see other people performing
the poem before you go up. That's so much better
not
than
how
me.
I did it.
So we've changed it slightly, but should be quite exciting. So thank you to, I think it's Jebel Ali School, who are going to host the English rounds for that, and Iman's got the Arabic under control too.
You said about knowing poetry by heart. I'm not going to test either of you, but is there a poem that you actually learnt by heart and you always recall in times of need?
Season of Mists and Mellow Fruitfulness. Ooh. Close bosom friend of the maturing sun, conspiring with him how to load it. Shall I stop now?
mine is W.B. Yeats.
That was Keats, by the way.
I will arise and go now. Go to Innisfree. So it's Lake Isle of Innisfree. It was one of my father's favourite poems. And I just, whenever I read it or recite it, I can see him and thinking that's what he would have, and that would have fitted really well with the Every Third Fort. That, you know, he wanted to end his days somewhere
absolutely.
Like that.
I, in my slight lack of general knowledge, had no idea where the Lake Isle of Innisfree was, and discovered myself there last summer at a wedding in Ireland. Oh, it's just, I can see, and great when you see the landscape and the poem fits
that
into its context.
That is an incredible poem, talking about, you know, on pavements, and obviously when he was writing it, he was not in that space, and it's got the thing about the beans growing and the water lapping and the linnet. I mean, it is one of the most beautiful poems.
You'll regret asking this question, Annabelle. How long have we got to keep reciting?
Not very long.
Not a lot.
Not very long.
The Gruffalo. Okay. The Gruffalo.
I'll stop now.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.